Hey, everybody. As we kick off this episode of Growing Greater, let's thank the team at Wells Fargo. The professionals of Wells Fargo focus on performing their best every day so they can do more for their customers and colleagues, their communities, and their shareholders. As one of the oldest and largest financial services firms in the United States, Wells Fargo offers a variety of retail, commercial, and corporate banking services to individuals and small businesses, middle market companies, large corporations, and institutions. With offices in 37 countries, the Wells Fargo team is uniquely positioned to support their customers who are conducting business around the corner and around the world. Learn more at wellsfargo.com. That's wellsfargo.com. And join me in thanking the team at Wells Fargo for their support of this podcast.
This is Growing Greater. Growing Greater. Bringing you the stories of economic growth, job creation, and business success from across the 11-county community of northern Delaware, southern New Jersey, and southeastern Pennsylvania. Now, here's Matt Gabry.
I ask myself, I've used the phrase torment earlier, I sometimes torment myself with, you know, why am I here and am I having enough of an impact with the finite amount of time that I have here?
Creating something that's meaningful, that has an impact and lasting effect, it's one indicator of success. And this week on Growing Greater, we meet an entrepreneur with deep roots in the greater Philadelphia community. It's Chris Cira, and he's who we just heard from at the top of the program. He's the founder and CEO of a digital design and development agency known as ArcWeb Technologies. Chris also co-founded Philly Startup Leaders. It's one of the city's most dynamic and engaged organizations dedicated to creating a supportive ecosystem for entrepreneurs. Here, Chris describes what he and his team specialize in at ArcWeb.
We do strategy, design, and development of enterprise software, and we've been a trusted partner of over 80 companies to help them launch a new digital product or introduce new technology into their business.
Okay. So what does all that mean? What is development, design, and what was the third one?
Strategy.
Strategy.
Yep.
Right.
Design and development.
Yeah. I mean, I know you have a really, I think, thoughtful approach, product discovery, product design, and product development. How does that translate into the person who's kind of outside your day-to-day world? What does that kind of mean to the average person?
We work with very large companies on some of the most important and innovative endeavors. And when a company wants to launch a new product, a new revenue line, they'll reach out to a company like ArcWeb to help them do the initial strategy work and market testing, the design work and design testing, and then eventually the development. And usually with large companies, they typically have another team that they're trying to staff up for this new and important endeavor. And they've hired us to do the initial and the hard go-to-market work, getting the product to market, doing the initial customer testing, and making sure that the first few iterations of the product actually meet the customer's needs.
Gotcha. So I want to dive into that a little bit more. But before we do, I want to back up and I want to talk about this kid named Chris Cira, who grew up in Upper Darby and later Drexel Hill, Delaware County, Pennsylvania, went to Upper Darby High. Right.
Yep.
So take me back, if you will, Chris, to, you know, your freshman or sophomore year at Upper Darby High, early 90s, I think.
Yeah.
Right. If you don't mind me saying that.
Definitely not.
That freshman or sophomore high schooler named Chris Cira, did you ever imagine you're going to be working in like the IT tech space and one day running your own kind of software development type company?
No way. I would say, you know, maybe different pathways or thoughts would lead there once in a while. But, you know, I wasn't predestined or predetermined to go in exactly in this path. And I feel like when I was young at that point in time, freshman in high school, I was a bit more creative and had more of a open mindset around what I was going to do in my future and was open to a lot of things. Whereas after I eventually went to Drexel, and I feel like once I was there, I was actually less creative and kind of more on a conveyor belt that most, you know, college kind of put you on.
Right.
But my father was a Philadelphia business owner and Philly retail person. I worked at the old gallery, had a store there and a bunch of other places. So I definitely had sort of hoped that I would own a business someday, not knowing exactly what that would be.
Right.
And I also had a cousin of mine, very influential, who had started an internet business in the 80s and then eventually to the 90s. This is in Westchester, Pennsylvania, so a little bit further out in the region.
Yeah.
And he was extremely successful with his business, and he was in IT. So that kind of got me to the business owner plus IT, and wow, that looks, you know, really great. But I didn't have at all an appreciation for the trailblazing that my cousin was doing at that time. It just seemed more academic and like, oh, I could do that if I wanted to.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I had no idea.
But clearly your cousin and your dad sound like two folks, whether you knew it at the time or not, were influencers for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Were you a tinkerer? Like, were you in shop? Were you in science class? And, you know, that kind of mindset of solving a problem, was that natural, or were you more like, you know, reading Beowulf?
So I was very fortunate and had resources of a variety of types. And my father, with his business, so he had multiple retail stores. So he had one at 69th Street, one on Sansom Street, 20th and Sansom, another one at the gallery, one in Castor Avenue in Northeast.
Wow.
And there was a fifth one somewhere that I'm blanking on. At one point in time, this is when his business was doing well. And, you know, there was a time when his business wasn't doing so well.
Yeah.
And he had a lot of people that were coming to him and asking him to ship their shoes. So purchasing the shoes in the retail store and asking them to be shipped.
Mm-hmm.
They happened to be shipped all different places. So he had the idea that we could start a direct mail portion of the shoe business that would use the retail stores to kind of market these. And so I had built essentially this database that was going to handle orders and essentially built this unit of his business over a few years. Like, I was getting home from high school and we literally had an 800 number that rang into our house where I was answering phone calls and processing orders. It was only open 9 hours a week, three hours, 3 days a week.
Still, that's pretty cool though.
But yeah.
It's cool as a high schooler, and it's pretty novel and innovative as a small business owner.
Yeah. So it was a great opportunity. And I was in high school. And then, like I said, I went to college and kind of forgot about everything for a little while.
So do you have memories as a kid? Would you come into 8th and Market or 9th and Market to the gallery with dad on a Saturday afternoon to, you know, do some inventory or whatever needed to be done?
Yeah, I would. So with the direct mail business, I was more at the 69th Street location, 69th and Market. But I would definitely come to the gallery store and work the store from time to time. And, you know, it was right at 8th or 9th Market. And he also used to work at Goldberg's, which is right here in Old City.
Yeah.
And if you're looking across the street from the deli, you can still see the Goldberg sign, which is also kind of a blast from the past. It's nice to be in Old City.
Well, you know, I asked the question about coming in as a kid with dad to the shop, whether it was 69th Street or Market Street, because, and I know we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit here, but I love that your shop is now on Market Street. So I love that your dad and you were walking the same streets, just, you know, 20 or 30 years apart.
I think about it all the time. Yeah, me too.
I bet. Yeah. If you don't mind me going off on a sidebar, I have three kids. My dad passed away when I was 15. He ran, as part of a family business in Kensington, a textile mill. And the building's still there, Jasper and Huntington. And my son, Alex, the oldest, graduated from Temple and now works at 20th and Market at PricewaterhouseCoopers. And he lives in Fishtown, 0.8 miles from Jasper and Huntington, the old Philadelphia Textile Services building. And I often say to Alex, you are walking the same streets that my dad and grandfather and uncles walked. And you never met them. You never even knew any of these folks because they all passed away before Alex, you know, engaged any of them. But they somehow have this connection and this bond that I think is special.
Yeah, that's remarkable. I'm going to look out for that building now when I go running up there next time.
Yeah, it's still there.
That's the thing about Philadelphia. It's a very sticky region. People tend to stay here generations and generations. And in fact, my family in one of my bloodlines has been here since the 1880s, immigrated from Italy into South Philly, and believe it or not, into the Italian Market area. So I actually live within blocks of where multiple family members have lived. And with Ancestry and MyHeritage and those now suite of products that have all kinds of research capabilities for average people, I've been able to uncover tons of addresses. Like, I'm right in the Centroid where I live right now, blocks.
That's cool.
And then, you know, my kids are in the neighborhood, and I'm trying to explain to my four-year-old, like, wow, your great-great-great-grandfather lived at 13th and Catherine and 8th and Bainbridge, and it's pretty remarkable.
That is pretty cool. Let's go take a walk past the great-great-great-great-grandpop's house.
Yes, 1322 really cool. Catherine Street.
That's very cool. So let's fast forward. You're at Drexel University. You graduate with what kind of degree, and what was next? And how'd you get it?
bachelor's in computer science. I initially started off in electrical engineering, and actually Upper Darby High School had a great engineering program there, and that was sort of what steered me into electrical engineering. So graduated. The job market wasn't that good in 2001 in the computer industry. It was right after the dot-com crash, and I had an opportunity to work in a research lab and stay at Drexel basically without having to pay my tuition and get a master's degree. So I decided to do that. I worked full-time, and then I eventually graduated in 2004, and then I worked at traffic.com, was the first job that I had right out of school.
And how did you score that gig at traffic.com? And was it like, this is the perfect job for me? This is like what I want to do.
It was very lucky for me. And Drexel has an amazing co-op program. And so I worked at GlaxoSmithKline for about 2.5 years while I was in school, part-time and full-time, a mixture of both in drug discovery lab.
Cool.
And had amazing access to computer resources and specifically computer graphics machines.
Yep.
And I had an SGI Irix at my desk, which people that were making movies like Toy Story and whatnot at the time had machines like that at their desk. So I had a lot of experience. So the research lab at Drexel, where I eventually worked, was really impressed. And so I was able to spend, you know, then eventually get a job there, spend years doing project work there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the building of those two things, I'd done computer graphics in both of those areas. Traffic.com had a TV and media division that they were going to rebuild. They mm-hmm. had a small number of markets and wanted to rebuild this product, and they needed a computer graphics programmer. And I had basically these two jobs where I'd spent years doing this type of programming.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And it wasn't in the game industry. So really, very few jobs were, you know, in this area related to that type of, like, in the game industry.
Yep.
It's not true now. There's actually a lot more in the region related to that. So I felt very lucky to score that job. And, you know, Drexel had, I felt, you know, prepared me very well for it.
Gotcha. So early in your career, and I'm looking at some notes here, but earlier in your career, maybe you're just describing this in your role at Drexel, Arc Systems Development. Was that the Drexel type of connection?
So Arc Systems Development was actually the precursor to ArcWeb. So when I was in grad school, I was doing some consulting work. And believe it or not, I was working for this guy, Ramos Saraceni, in the Callow Hill area of Philadelphia. And mm-hmm. he's the designer who created the piano in the movie Big, you know, when they're doing chopsticks in the movie Big. So he's designed all kinds of, you know, really impressive things in his career. And I was working for him. So he was my main account and essentially my main client that I was consulting for. And we were doing museum exhibition and interactive displays that were actually Children's Hospital Philadelphia had one, number of museums had them, and mm-hmm. I was basically doing programming computer graphics as a consultant.
Very cool.
The ARC in systems development there and the ARC web are sort of related.
Well, I was going to come back and ask that because there's almost a theme of ARC attached to your career. Kind of appropriately, I guess, right? So you're at traffic.com for a couple of years, 2.5 years or so, and then, you know, you shifted gears. I think the traffic industry has gone through a lot of gyrations, and it's probably a different space today than it was 10, 15 years or so ago, right? And you end up working, you know, in another space here in Greater Philadelphia. Was that hard to transition away from traffic.com, and where'd you end up?
So traffic.com was a 500-person company at that point, and
wow.
very exciting in the sense that it was a startup. It started out of Penn here in Philly, and then the founder was still there and had brought this company to a point where it had IPO'd and whatnot. So I got to see, you know, at some level, I wasn't there for the whole story, but got to see, you know, what it's like to have a high growth company kind of reach, you know, this IPO point and whatnot. And I was really excited by that and felt like, you know, it's within reach to some degree. So Dracontis, which is the company that I had joined afterwards, that was actually a Drexel spin out. So some technology from Drexel that was spun out into a separate company was like a 4 to 6 person company at that time that I had joined it. And so it was an opportunity to really work in a startup environment, early stage company with some entrepreneurs and some support from, you know, large institutions here in the region. So I was very excited by that. And that's why it was more about joining a small company. And they ended up being a very successful company, DOJ contractor, and, you know, still an independent company today and still a story for the region.
And you spent some time there, you learned, you grew, and you evolved into a new opportunity.
Yeah, it was great. It was great to be in a company where the whole company fits in like one room.
Yeah.
You know, like sharing all the spaces and just getting to see kind of what entrepreneurs and, you know, founders do in their day-to-day activities.
Yeah. And it had to be a little bit of a culture shift for you in that you were coming from a bigger office environment with 500 plus or minus folks. You may not have worked with all 500 in one big space, but you know what I mean? To a smaller, more intimate type gathering.
Exactly. And yeah. So it gave me a lot of confidence to see, you know, this is how a small company operates and whatnot. So in my next, you know, chapter of my life, I had co-founded a company called Views It. And there was really a 2 to 3 person company at that point in time. And so, it, you know, seeing the previous company and those entrepreneurs gave me the confidence to finally take the plunge and quit that job and leave that salary behind.
Yeah, right. So I wanted to ask about that because I did see that in 2007, you started this company called Views It. How hard was it for you to kind of take that plunge? I mean, that's a milestone moment when you're sitting at your desk at a shop where it's, to your point, stable and successful and say, hey, I want to do something else.
Yeah, so I was 27 at that time, so I feel very lucky that I was, you know, able to do that. But I had been thinking about it and almost tormented by the idea of doing that for so long. And eventually, you know, you think about something for so long, and it's like, why have I been thinking about this for so long? I should do it. I had been what's called moonlighting on other startup endeavors for several years.
Right.
None that really panned out, but I started to just get really frustrated with, you know, essentially working 2 jobs, trying to manage my relationships and whatnot outside of work, and eventually took the plunge. And with Views It, it was people that I already knew and I thought had a really good chance of us building a company from nothing. And I was excited by it. So that gave me the confidence to do it.
And how do you describe Views It, and how is it different from other companies that you worked in or had envisioned?
I struggle with pitching this company now in 2019,
yeah.
But at the time, it was a web-based document viewer.
Okay.
And eventually became a document management solution, a cloud-based document management solution.
Okay.
So at the time, there was no real solution to view PDFs or Word documents in a web browser. And so we had built technology that any publisher or any website could use to embed these documents right into their website. Now, this is very common today, especially the large companies, the Amazons, the Dropboxes, the Googles. They've all implemented this, and we were hoping to license this technology to them over time. And eventually, the company, we did raise money in the Philly community. That's probably a story worth, you know, fleshing out a bit more, who the players were there. We raised money in the Philly community. We were able to sell the company eventually and return positive return to the investors that were involved. So it was a 6-7 year endeavor total and a great part of my story. But if I'm honest about the actual company and the success, we didn't come anywhere near achieving the vision that we wanted to.
Right.
And we're not successful in getting it really to like a Series A or B level size company.
Right.
So
you were successful, though. I mean, successful enough for another company to say, we like what you're doing, and I think we want to acquire you, which is essentially what happened, right?
Yeah. So it's complex. So the way that we got the investors out was actually prior to the acquisition.
Okay.
And we had decided at the time to really change the organization of the company. So I was basically going to leave, and I wanted to make sure that we had made the investors whole before I was going to jump into my next mission, essentially.
Right.
And then Brent and Greg, my 2 partners, who I still work with today in a variety of capacities and are great people, had agreed that they were going to continue to operate the business. So they actually operated the business for several years after I had left, and then we sold it years later. So I was still a shareholder and still involved in the transaction, but I had actually left and I'd started ArcWeb at the time.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes sense. And I do want to dive into something you had mentioned, because I think it's worth teasing out where we are today compared to where we were in 2007. How hard was it to attract investors to kind of do your pitch, have them appreciate the vision that you and your 2 partners were articulating to them, and get them to say, I believe in not only you guys, but I believe in the technology and the vision you have for this company, and we're going to write you a check. Hard then, harder today, or just 2 totally different worlds? We're talking apples and oranges.
I think it's easier today than it was 10 years ago. The Philadelphia, the city proper ecosystem. So, you know, the 11 county region is one thing, but really the city proper didn't have as vibrant of a startup community as it does today. And so I felt like much of the venture community was more of suburbs and sort of outer counties, sort of that's where the community was, and not really so much in Philly. So the ecosystem, I feel like, was very different, whereas now most of the investors are in Philly or have an office in Philly. And, you know, a lot of the action, a lot of the companies and a lot of the startups are all located in Philly.
Yeah.
But just going back to some of the other aspects of your question. So we were first-time entrepreneurs, so we had never started any other company before. So I think anybody that's a first-time entrepreneur is going to have a really tough road to climb if you've never started a company before. The other side of it is none of us had a salesperson on the team. So I also think it's a tough road to climb if you don't really have, you know, a known salesperson on your team.
Right.
We were very inspired by Paul Graham, the Y Combinator co-founder, and the model that that company was putting forward was, you know, get three engineers together to start a company, just build it and they will come. And we were very inspired by that. So we really took that to heart and went forward with it. So I think we were charging hard and didn't, you know, necessarily, weren't necessarily bothered by those. But we eventually were able to get Ben Franklin Technology Partners to write us a letter to say that they were willing to commit $100,000 if we would find another $200,000 or $300,000 that would match it. So they kind of were our first investor, and they didn't even put cash in the company yet. They just basically wrote a commitment letter. We then used that, and we talked to Robinhood Ventures, another regional investor, private investors forum. We pitched at the Angel Venture Fair. You know, basically, we're hitting the scene of the region for the venture community and all the different outlets. And we closed our round right in 2008 when Lehman was starting to fail. So, you know, hats off to everybody that stayed in the ring, because I think a lot of people would have pulled out, you know, while chaos was happening.
Sure.
But hats off to folks in all those groups that I mentioned. Everybody stayed in with their verbal commitments and followed through with the investment.
Well, that's great. I mean, sorry for interrupting. Yeah. That says a lot about them, but it also says a lot about you. They believed in you. Seriously.
Yeah, and it was our team. So it was Brent Matzell, Greg Bright, and myself were the co-founders.
You, plural. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And Chris, I'd love to hear what you just described a moment ago about engaging the VC community and other investors who believe in what you and your partners were doing. Did you have to go through a similar kind of process? And, you know, I'll make it up and say, you know, you launched ArcWeb Technologies in June of 11. So in January of 11 or November of 10, were you going through the same kind of process of attracting additional investors, or was the ArcWeb kind of stand-up process different?
With ArcWeb Technologies, I was doing initially consulting after I had left Vuzit.
Gotcha.
So it was really just a consulting vehicle, and I wasn't 100% sure what I was going to do in my next stage of career. And I had three options that I was considering. So if you and I had had coffee at that point in time, I would say, I'm willing to join a startup team, like I'm looking to join a company. I'm working on this startup idea. I was working on this CRM-focused product at the time. And also, by the way, the third thing was that I'm looking for consulting work. So I was using ArcWeb to just, you know, as a business vehicle, not really 100% sure what it would become. Eventually, I had decided that I was going to stick with the services company and focus on growing that. And at that point, I did consider, do I bring in some partners of some kind, whether they be sweat equity partners or institutional capital partners or something like that? And, and ultimately just decided to, well, let me see how far I can go with this current team and current model and go from there. And so the company was bootstrapped.
Yep.
And I think most services companies can be bootstrapped. Mm-hmm. So that's like not uncommon, or that's not extraordinary in any way.
Right.
And it was able to just keep it that way as we've grown.
The Small Business Person of the Year Award is presented to a business owner who embodies community leadership and entrepreneurial spirit. As a dedicated leader and a pillar of the region's tech and startup industries, it is our honor to celebrate Chris Sierra as the 2016 Small Business Person of the Year.
Presented annually by the Chamber of Commerce for Greater Philadelphia, the Excellence Awards celebration, it attracts hundreds of prominent business leaders to recognize the people and the companies that have demonstrated unique vision, innovation, and achievement in support of the Greater Philadelphia region's economy and small to mid-sized business community. This award, it was presented to Chris not only for his success and rapid business growth, but also for his deep commitment to developing and supporting the region's technology and small business communities. And speaking of being committed to supporting Greater Philadelphia's business community, let's thank the team at CBRE. CBRE is one of the world's leading full-service real estate services and investment companies. They offer a broad range of integrated real estate services, including things like strategic consulting, property sales and leasing, mortgage services, property management, investment management, appraisal and valuation, and so much more. For the professionals of CBRE, it's all about building long-term relationships by connecting the right people with the right capital and opportunities. and they do it all while maintaining a laser-sharp focus on creating winning outcomes for their clients, their employees, and their shareholders. They seek input from others, and they embrace trust and collaboration. You can learn more at cbre.us. That's cbre.us. And join me in thanking CBRE for believing in us at Select Greater Philadelphia. Now let's get back to our conversation with Chris.
So I want to shift gears slightly because, you know, when I think of and reflect on Chris Cira and your role, not only at ArcWeb Technologies, but in the greater Philadelphia region, one thing that stands out for me is you kind of epitomize the profile and the spirit of this podcast, Growing Greater, because you've grown companies and you've grown personally and professionally over your career. And part of what you've done is give back, and you get involved in different ways, some below the radar screen, I suspect, and others, it's like, oh yeah, that's how I know Chris. And I'd love for you to talk with us a little bit about your inspiration for and the hurdles you had to overcome around Philly startup leaders. You can talk about others as well, but I was particularly drawn to that because it's such a powerful story and it continues today to help people in really significant ways.
Yeah, so as we were talking about earlier with the Philadelphia ecosystem and particularly the Philly core side of Philly, the ecosystem here I think was strong if you went to Wharton and they had a lot of events, and I don't believe that they were public events. There wasn't a lot that someone essentially off the street could go to find a place to find entrepreneurs. So there was a few events in the Philly region at the time, and a number of people in our community, which eventually became Philly startup leaders, all felt like when you went to certain events in the community, again, this is like 2005, 2006, 7, 8,
yeah,
you would go to an event, there would be less entrepreneurs and more service providers at these events. And so what Philly startup leaders became was basically a safe place for entrepreneurs to go where they wouldn't get pitched. was part of it. Also, everyone that was in the group was at the same stage of life and career and trying to build a business. And after the dot-com crash, a lot of the people that were in the burbs, most of them weren't in the city for sure. And, you know, it's also hard to access them. So there wasn't much going on in Philly. So Philly startup leaders started to have these monthly meetings mm-hmm. in the city, and it was all entrepreneurs. So it grew very fast from a monthly, essentially what would be called now a meetup, into, you know, what it is today, which is a whole community-focused organization that does a lot of things for the community.
Yeah. And that has to be one of the highlights when you look back on your career, not that you're anywhere near, you know, wrapping up your career, right? You got another 40 years to go.
Yeah.
That has to be one of those moments where you're like, wow, that was a cool time. You may not have recognized it at the time, but that was cool. And you got to be super proud of where that is today. And I suspect, are you still involved? And maybe not in a leadership level, day-to-day operations, but I suspect it's something you never let go of.
Thanks. I'm grateful to have had the opportunity to participate in all of that. And yeah, I'm certainly proud of being involved and whatnot. There's a lot of people that have been involved in Philly Startup Leaders over the years. I mean, there's been literally hundreds of volunteers over the years and certain people that have been in leadership roles and too many to mention, but it's very much been a community story. And so certainly not attributed to just me or even Blake Janelle, the original founder of Philly Startup Leaders. And he was the original person that got that first group of people together mm-hmm. for the series of meetings. And it didn't take long for it to get a lot of traction. And then I got very involved creating the mailing list, organizing the events. I became, you know, the tech director.
Yep.
And the group got very organized. There was actually a government sector focus group when John Street was the mayor at the time. And it's interesting because eventually that government group shut down. Hmm. And then, you know, fast forward to like the Michael Nutter administration, they were extremely involved in entrepreneurship. And Philly Startup Leaders was one of the, you know, the conduits and advisors, you know, to the mayor at that time, which was great. I thought that was a lot of great things for the entrepreneurship community happened when Michael Nutter was the mayor here too.
Yeah, for sure. So Chris Cira, born and raised in Delaware County, right? Successful career that you've navigated in the greater Philadelphia region. You've seen a lot of talent and a lot of hurdles and a lot of things you had to navigate. And I have a two-part question here, and I'll start with, were you ever tempted, did you ever have an opportunity to move? To say, you know what, great opportunities being offered to me in California or Massachusetts or Texas or North Carolina, How did you handle that kind of crossroads?
So I would say I had sort of a mental crisis about this every year when I was in my 20s. But by the time I had started Vuzit at 27, I decided I was going to stay here and be here. But in that time period, you know, and that's the thing about cities, people come from all over the place, right? It's a melting pot. So you hear all these stories of other places and then you get connections in other places and it's easy to go. I had really thought about the media and entertainment, specifically the game industry or the movie industry, given that I really wanted to be in computer graphics and real-time rendering. So I really saw myself going to the West Coast, but I had some opportunities to go out there. And it's funny because I was kind of, I just couldn't see myself moving and going out there. And maybe it's because of my friends that were here. Maybe it's because of family. I'm not sure, but I could never muster up the confidence to do it.
Yeah.
I mustered up the confidence to start my own business and quit my job, but you know, leaving, couldn't do that.
Yeah. No, and you're not alone. And it's a different kind of pull on your muscle, if you will, of life that I feel really good about taking this risk, but not so much about that one.
At my 30th birthday party, it was pretty remarkable. At my 40th, I didn't have time. I'm still looking to celebrate that one. But my 30th, I had friends from high school, I had friends from college, and then I had business community friends that were all there.
That's cool.
Because I lived at the time I lived at 43rd and Chester Avenue, so I was still in West Philly.
Yeah.
And it was easy for everybody in all three circles of my life to come visit for my party.
That's great. That's really great. So where will Arc Web Technologies be in 3 years from now, in 5 years from now, 10 years from now?
So our vision is to be the premier digital transformation partners for forward-looking companies. So taking that out several years, that means that we become a multinational company of choice for people that are trying to launch their new digital innovation efforts. And I, you know, would say over 3, 5, and 10 years, it's more and better.
Yeah. There's a kid sitting at the intersection of State and Lansdowne in Upper Darby. And let's say she's 15. There's a young person who is thinking about going to Drexel. Maybe he or she is graduating from Drexel. And then there's another young person who's, you know, celebrating his or her 30th birthday. And they're at a crossroads. All three of them are at different crossroads in their life. What kind of advice do you give an individual like that who comes to you and says, Chris, I really admire your background. I'm trying to figure out what I want to do next. Is there a specific kind of guidance you can offer to somebody like that and have offered to somebody like that?
You can find your passion and you should pursue it. And I think if you just focus on what you're passionate about, you'll figure out a way to make the economics work. And part of that's confidence, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you also have to believe in yourself. But you know, the passion comes first and the confidence usually comes after.
So as Chris embraces his passion in the tech industry, we here at Growing Greater look forward to watching his continued positive impact on his clients and on the entrepreneurial community regionally, nationally, and globally. If you liked Chris's story of growth and risk-taking, be sure to check out other inspiring episodes of our Growing Greater podcast at radio.com, wherever you listen to your podcast, or at selectgreaterphl.com/podcast. Be sure to rate and review our podcast and share it with friends and family and colleagues and through social media too. As we wrap this episode, let's thank the team at CGI. With 43 years of experience and expertise, CGI has earned its reputation as a leading end-to-end IT business consulting services provider. Their year-over-year growth, well, that's a testament to the confidence their clients place in the CGI team. Serving clients in the health, life sciences, oil and gas, and banking and capital markets industries, among others, the CGI team consistently delivers unparalleled managed IT and business processing services, systems integration, and IT consulting services. And the CGI team in Greater Philadelphia, they are especially focused on supporting the growth of regional companies that are leading the way in the life sciences and biopharma space. You can learn more at CGI.com. That's CGI.com. And join me in thanking CGI for believing in us at Select Greater Philadelphia. Growing Greater is presented by Select Greater Philadelphia, a council of our Chamber of Commerce for Greater Philadelphia. Select is the business attraction organization for Northern Delaware, Southern New Jersey, and Southeastern Pennsylvania, and helps to grow the economic vibrancy of our collective community by attracting new businesses and new jobs to our region. Special thanks to our program producers, Elena Karmazin and Maricela Juarez, along with the great team of marketing and creative services professionals at our chamber. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in anytime and anywhere you get your podcasts or online at selectgreaterphl.com/podcast.